Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Tuesday, August 6, 2013. Well, it's not a secret. I'm about to head out on vacation, but my destination, well, I'm going to keep it to myself. Who knows who might be listening and want to follow me, huh? We are surrounded by secrets and secrecy, and here in the summer of leaks, it is eroding badly. Exhibit A today comes from our intrepid friend and correspondent, Jason Leopold, now reporting for Al Jazeera. And as you know, he filed an Information Act, a Freedom of Information Act request recently to see a document that imposed new security regulations on prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And two bizarre things have surfaced from this. One is that our government fears that the Al-Qaeda Navy may head for Cuba sometime soon and attempt to break into Guantanamo and free up to 166 individuals held there. And the other bizarre finding here is that the left hand of our government doesn't know what the right hand has already redacted. And we then descend into a comedy of errors. So, first up, on the practices of fondling the genitals of prisoners as they are shuttled from one portion of the camp at Guantanamo to another, was only recently put into effect. Prisoners say that it discourages them from attending meetings with their attorneys because they get their junk grabbed at least twice in the process. And a federal judge, Royce Lamberth, banned the searches, called them religiously and culturally abhorrent. Ah, but the Obama administration quickly appealed. And in response, the government last Friday released a partially redacted version of the Commandant of Guantanamo's declaration. And this is where it gets really bizarre. Because in court, the government says that it cannot release this document in full because it would enable our enemies, particularly Al-Qaeda, to understand the processes and practices inside Guantanamo and would aid any effort to break in and free the prisoners. And while they give global power to Al-Qaeda, after telling us that it has been degraded and nearly wiped out, we're supposed to be afraid that they're going to break into Gitmo? Now, to be fair, the latest video attributed to Ayman al-Zawahiri, now the alleged leader of Al-Qaeda, includes a line about how he wants to, quote, "the terror network will spare no effort to free prisoners held at the U.S. military-run detention center in Cuba." All right. That's an aspiration on the part of Al-Qaeda. But to claim that Commandant Bogdan's declaration regarding the security measures and essentially this aggressive strip search of prisoners, who haven't been outside the compound, by the way, I don't know where they expect them to pick up contraband. At any rate, they claim that the release of this document could harm our national security because it would better prepare enemies to attack the detention facility. It would reveal to the public specific operational security measures or force protection procedures, and thus the limitations of those measures and procedures. But what the government lawyers apparently weren't aware of is that someone else had already released a redacted version of Bogdan's declaration. So they then released a differently redacted version of Bogdan's declaration. And when you compare the two side by side, you can see that the things that they have blacked out are trivial, are really laughable. So, for example, in one version, It reads, if the detainee would need to use the restroom in Camp 6, the meeting must end and the detainee would need to be moved by guard staff back to his cell. In the other version, though, it says, if the detainees would need to use the restroom in Camp 6, and the balance of that is redacted. So they're telling us that if Al-Qaeda finds out the last part of this line, that the meeting must end and the detainee would need to be moved by guard staff back to his cell, that's intelligence that is so sensitive that it can't be revealed? All right, here's another version here, another comparison. In the version released last Friday, it reads, this entire sentence, the frisk search that is conducted is to ensure that there is nothing concealed between the clothing and the body. However, they removed the word frisk from the other version. As if that word, what? I mean, this is mind-boggling. It is bizarre. And yesterday I quoted David Sanger of the New York Times, the chief Washington reporter there, who said that because we have so many secrets, it's hard to keep anything secret. And it's hard for people to know what is actually secret and what isn't. And this little exercise of these two separately redacted versions of the same document just illustrate this in full living color. And we'll get in a moment to the worldwide terror alert now attributed to chatter between Zawahiri and the leader of Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula, which, unfortunately, at this point is almost as laughable as the dual redactions of the Gitmo document. As you know, there are many ways you can support the Peter B. Collins Show, and first and foremost, I'm grateful to those who subscribe. $1 for a 24-hour pass, $5 a month you can cancel anytime, $50 a year is our best bet. And if you're a new annual subscriber right now, I've got Sibel Edmonds' Classified Woman book for you, that's your bonus. Plus, while they last, bags of Kona coffee supplied by our listener Russ on the Big Island of Hawaii. I've got a few of those left, so act quickly if you're a coffee head and you love the Kona beans, because they've been aromatically enhancing my office and studio for the last couple of weeks. If you want full details on the subscription process, it's easy. Just go to peterbcollins.com and click on the link that says sign up right under my picture in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. The other way you can support our work is to do business with GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy has the best deals on domain name registration and web hosting. I've been working with them for over 10 years, and I've always gotten great customer service from them. Right now, if you sign up for web hosting with unlimited storage and bandwidth starting at just $1.99 a month, you'll get your domain name free. And to get a special deal that also supports this Peter B. Collins Show, follow the GoDaddy link in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com, and today's link gets you a coupon for $10 off a purchase of $40 or more at GoDaddy.com. Well, this worldwide alert continues, and more information has leaked out since I spoke to you yesterday, and they are explicitly telling us that they intercepted communications, they don't say how, between Ayman al-Zawahiri, however he pronounces his name. He's an Egyptian medical doctor, longtime pal of Osama bin Laden, and took over after Osama left the planet. The other party to the communication, Nasser al-Wuhayshi, the head of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Now, they're described as intercepts, and this buttresses the argument made by skeptics like me that this is simply worldwide political theater designed to show us how important the NSA's surveillance programs are both at home and abroad, and that we should sit down and shut up and put away our pipe dreams about the Fourth Amendment and the Bill of Rights, because there are evildoers out there who want to hurt America. And just as preposterous as the idea that Al-Qaeda is going to launch an assault on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, is this idea that they would use any kind of communications that could be intercepted. After all, they learned how we found out about Obatabad. I'm sure they've seen Zero Dark 30. And so it is amazing to me that we use propaganda to brag about the sources, methods, and techniques that we use to monitor people. And then we want to pretend that all that shit is secret when it suits us. And I still have to suggest the possibility here that Obamaco is being played by Zawahiri and this guy in Yemen. Can't you imagine them saying, hey, let's tweak the Americans. Let's give them some chatter. Now, they talked about an attack that would have been occurring this past Sunday, timed with the end of Ramadan. To our knowledge, that hasn't happened. But despite this worldwide alert and the risk of an attack, we haven't stood down. We just launched another drone strike in the eastern Marib region of Yemen early today. And so we act like that wouldn't provoke a reaction, and that's not a provocative thing for us to do at a time when we're on high alert. We're pulling people out of Yemen, military and civilians. It's really just bizarre. And the arrogance of the American position is what gets me. Now, I'll repeat that if they think that we're stupid enough to believe that one of the most hunted men on the planet, Zawahiri, would pick up a payphone, a cell phone, a satellite phone, use a courier, send an email that could be intercepted by PRISM, they're not that stupid. And I'm not that stupid either. Yesterday, I mentioned that we're getting a little more information on the backstory to the Benghazi assault last September 11th in Libya. I mentioned that Jake Tapper, who's now at CNN, had reported on the truth tests of CIA employees who were there in Benghazi at what we now are pretty clear on was a gun running station where they were grabbing armaments from the inventory of Muammar Gaddafi after we toppled his government and shipping them to rebels in Syria. And I mentioned that I was uncomfortable with the sourcing of part of it because it comes from World Nut Daily, the right-wing news website. But I also mentioned that my friend Pepe Escobar first uttered the idea that Benghazi was a weapons running operation last January. And so now the Telegraph, London newspaper, is pulling all this together in a story bylined Damian McElroy. They say up to 35 CIA operatives were working in Benghazi during the attack last September. And that CNN says that a CIA team was working in an annex near the consulate on a project to supply missiles from Libyan armories to Syrian rebels. Sources say that more Americans were hurt in the assault spearheaded by suspected Islamic radicals than had previously been reported. CIA chiefs were actively working to ensure the real nature of the operations in the city did not get out. So that's the source of the cover-up that I have commented on from the start. Quoting CNN, the Telegraph says, since January, some CIA operatives involved in the agency's missions in Libya have been subjected to frequent, even monthly, polygraph examinations. Frank Wolf, Republican congressman from Langley, CIA headquarters, wants a new investigation into Benghazi. I think it's a form of a cover-up. I think it's an attempt to push it under the rug. And I think the American people are feeling the same way. Well, there are limits to how much they will spill about the true nature of that operation. And I still don't believe that the cover-up was designed to protect Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or anybody else. They certainly were defensive because it was high election season when this broke last September. And we deserve to know the truth. Good news from Fort Meade, Maryland today. If you heard last week's recap with Kevin Gostola of the sentencing phase of the Bradley Manning court-martial. You know, the one thing we discussed was a move by the defense to essentially combine some of the charges, to merge them. And this led to my discussion with Kevin about how the judge could sentence Manning to serve penalties for different counts, either consecutively or concurrently. Concurrently means that the time you do applies to all of the charges or all of the convictions, where consecutively means you do them one at a time. And it appears, and I am not fully schooled on the military justice system's details, but it appears that this sets the stage for concurrent sentencing of Bradley Manning. And just on the face of it, it reduces his maximum exposure from 130 years down to a mere 90. So, it's progress. But what's fascinating, according to the Guardian newspaper's report of the proceedings at Fort Meade, the court-martial judge, Colonel Denise Lind, granted all defense requests to merge counts except specifications 4 and 6 of charge 2 that relate to stealing the Iraq and Afghan war logs. Now, here's the interesting detail. Reporters present in the court said they were unable to record details of the judge's ruling because she read her judgment so fast. In previous hearings, The Guardian has counted that Judge Lind can read at the rate of 180 words a minute. Now, I can type close to that fast, and I suppose if I talk really fast, maybe I can get 180 words a minute, but I've never really tried. In one session, even the stenographers employed by the Freedom of the Press Foundation struggled to keep up with Lind as she read. Here's a tweet from Alexa O'Brien, who together with Kevin Gostola has been there for almost every day of the proceedings. Quote, Judge Lind's recitation of her ruling on merging of sentencing charges was ridiculously fast. No respect for the public and press. Judge read merger ruling too fast to transcribe. And this is just one of the games that they're playing. I mean, there is no reason that the judge needs to do that. She knows that they're not releasing the official transcript to the public. And this, you know, I really can't understand why she would operate in that manner. Meanwhile, across the country at Fort Hood, Texas, the court-martial of Major Nidal Malik Hassan is getting underway. There is little question about what happened, because he acknowledged in the opening commentary on Tuesday, the evidence will clearly show that I am the shooter. Now, he is representing himself, always a bad move in American jurisprudence. And the court tried to talk him out of it. But Major Hassan, who is confined to a wheelchair because the armed response to his shooting left him paralyzed from the waist down. He killed 13 people and wounded 30 others in a shooting spree on November 5, 2009. And in my view, this case has few implications of the importance of the Bradley Manning court-martial. The one thing I will say is that the victims of this shooting have not been properly cared for, even though our government says they have. And whether they want to call it a workplace event or a terrorist event, it's not that important to me. But I want to make sure that the victims get the care and the any kind of settlements that they deserve. Glenn Greenwald published today again in The Guardian, here in the summer of leaks. This particular article not driven by Ed Snowden's leaks. But he follows up on the claim and dismantles, piece by piece, the claim from Obama and others, that the NSA's surveillance programs are fully disclosed to Congress and subject to congressional oversight and congressional reauthorization and congressional debate. Well, Greenwald profiles a Republican and a Democrat who have tried and failed to get information out of the House Intelligence Committee. They are Republican Morgan Griffith of Virginia and Democrat Alan Grayson of Florida. First, to Griffith. He has requested information about the NSA over 6 weeks ago. He asked for access to the classified FISA court orders referenced on Meet the Press the weekend before. In that June 25th letter, Griffith requested the semi-annual FISA court reviews and critiques of the NSA, saying, "I took an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution, and I intend to do so." Griffith is a lawyer, but he's not a member of the Intelligence Committee. And the president has asserted that all the members of Congress are fully briefed, know what's going on, but it's not true. Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, not on the Intelligence Committee, says he's been shocked and surprised by the recent revelations. So, the congressman has received no response to any of his requests. Then we have Alan Grayson, the fiery Democrat from Florida, who's been on our program frequently this year. June 19th, he wrote to the House Intelligence Committee requesting some of the same documents. And 4 weeks later, the chairman, Mike Rogers, former FBI agent, wrote to Grayson informing him his request had been denied by a committee voice vote. Grayson didn't take that one lying down. He talked to the ranking member, Dutch Ruppersberger, the Democrat, I think, from Maryland, and a big apologist for the NSA. And Ruppersberger said that he wasn't aware of any committee action, didn't even know about Grayson's letter. And so then Grayson challenged Mike Rogers, said, "Well, look, how could you have a voice vote if the ranking member doesn't know anything about it?" So the follow-up from the committee, "Thanks for your inquiry, Mr. Grayson. The full committee attends business meetings. At our July 18 business meeting, there were 7 Democrat members and 9 Republican members in attendance. The transcript is classified." So it's a brick wall for members of Congress who wish to exercise their fundamental right to oversee these programs before they vote on, say, renewing funding for them or renewing authorization for a Patriot Act. And so it goes. A judge in Wisconsin has put a longer injunction blocking the new Wisconsin anti-abortion law that requires providers to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. Here's a hero. Judge William Conley, Federal District Court, issued his ruling extending for 4 months his temporary injunction on the enforcement of this law. And in justifying it, he said that state lawyers were not likely to prove that the admitting privileges requirement was reasonably related to a woman's health, and that the organizations opposing it could probably show the mandate posed a substantial obstacle to obtaining abortions. I expect this pattern of judicial restraint and blocking of these draconian, radical right-wing Republican abortion rollback laws, but we can't rely on that in every case. There could be a judge that thinks that Texas is doing the right thing by imposing these restrictions. And that's why I brought you our dispatch from North Carolina, Professor Stephen Boyd at Wake Forest, and why I'm challenging the Democratic leadership to take on these confrontations over the rollback in voting rights and abortion rights. Nothing could be more critical, in my opinion. Yesterday, we told you about the Reuters exclusive report about close cooperation between the NSA and the Drug Enforcement Agency, and that this amounts to mission creep, where they take NSA intercepts that were intended to protect us from terrorism, right? And they use it to pop ordinary drug runners and drug dealers. And I'm very concerned about this expansion. And over at the White House, they've announced that the administration will investigate itself. It always makes us feel better, doesn't it? Yes, Jay Carney says the Department of Justice is looking at the NSA and the DEA. And I'm sure that'll take forever and nothing will happen. And Reuters writes that while the NSA activities are aimed at terrorists, the SOD, Special Operations Division at DEA, focuses on drug dealers and money launderers. That distinction troubles some civil libertarians who fear secretive measures designed to target terrorists are being used to catch ordinary criminals. And we have a case here that I mentioned in passing a week or two ago. The guy who was running my local sewer district ran off with $300,000+ that they had loaned to him and he was supposed to pay back. They found him in the Philippines. And I consider him to be a garden variety criminal. It offends me that he stole money from my sewer district. But I don't want to use that. I don't want the NSA and the CIA used to capture criminals who happen to leave the country. And so the reassurances from the White House don't mean much to me. Now, lately it's been announced that both CNN and NBC have big plans to run miniseries or movies, biopics, about Hillary Rodham Clinton, our most recent Secretary of State, and the most frequently mentioned candidate for president for the Democrats, at least at this point, in 2016. I'm not on board with Hillary, I'll tell you that. I want to review all other options before we settle on another Clinton presidency. But it's interesting because this plans, these separate plans by NBC and CNN have aroused an angry Republican response from Reince Priebus, the chair of the Republican National Committee. And he's threatening to lock out CNN and NBC from the Republican convention and maybe even their ongoing debates that were such a great sideshow in the last cycle. And frankly, I don't support the Republican reaction, but I also am not that excited about special gauzy and brown-nosing depictions of Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I'll remind people that it was a negative movie about Hillary Clinton produced by Citizens United that was nominally the basis for the case that went before the Supreme Court before they turned that case on its ear and opened up the spigots for corporate money in political campaigns. So the bottom line is that movies about Hillary have unintended impact and consequences. We'll see where this one takes us. And finally, I mentioned that, number one, I'm heading off on vacation and I won't tell you where. I will be back here in the seat on the 19th of August for our next news and comment podcast. And I've got to get my mind into Jell-O mode because tomorrow I will report to the airport and have to submit to the scrutiny of the Transportation Security Agency. When I have time, I opt out of the body scanners and flip off Chertoff in my own mind and submit to the little pat-down search from the guys who are always squeamish about reaching down there between my legs. But the news about the TSA today is mission creep. And as a result of the worldwide terror alert, and why did our government disclose the chatter between Zawahiri and Yemen? Right, what's that all about? They don't usually do that. Anyway, as part of the fear up domestically, they dispatched the VIPR teams, TSA's Visible Intermodal Prevention and Response Squads, and they showed up at Union Station in Washington, D.C., and other places that are not airports. Now, John Pistoli, the administrator of TSA, says, "Our mandate is to provide security and counterterrorism operations for all high-risk transportation targets, not just airports and aviation." And so they're telling us that this VIPR program now has a $100 million annual budget, and that last year, the teams ran more than 8,800 unannounced checkpoints and search operations outside of airports, like the Indy 500 and the Democratic and Republican conventions. And once again, this just points up the expanding police state that has been erected in this country and is becoming more visible. And there is no end in sight. As I leave you to unplug for a couple of weeks, and I'll be watching the news a little bit, but I'm going to read some novels and clear my mind a little bit. But I am looking for a way to end all this. And for my NSA minders, I'm not talking about a violent revolution. Not talking about any violent means. I'm saying that we need to throw off the oppression of this big brother police state apparatus that isn't making us any safer, but has made our government so much more powerful than it should be, than it has been since the corrections after Watergate back in the 1970s. We need a new correction to the national security state. Got any ideas? Drop me an email. Peter@peterbcollins.com. And meanwhile, I'm going to just take off all my clothes and head for the airport.
I used to fly with my clothes on till the airline clothing banned. We went from scanning to banning. One airline had tanning, and this was the ad they ran. Fly safe, fly naked. No weapons to find. You're safer. Naked Airlines. No carry-ons, no clothing, no laptops. Well, laptops. And I'm feeling shy. Instead of metal detection, no clothing, directions from the nude flight attendant, a guy. Damn. Fly safe, fly naked. No weapons to find. You're safer. Naked Airlines. Well, we're all in this together and dressed in the all together. Managed safely to arrive. It's been a long, strange trip, 'cause we had to strip. But hey, we're alive. Everybody fly safe, fly naked. No weapons to find. You're safer. Naked Airlines. Yeah, no one's got nothing on. Naked Airlines.